You are listening to the Two and Out CFL podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Like Saskatchewan got caught. Maybe we're looking at the wrong team.
Yeah, they just got caught. They sucked at cheating. When you can't cheat, then you know things are bad.
Grab some poutine and a double-double. It's time for the Two and Out CFL podcast.
Now they have to kick it out, and they do!
Every week, Travis Kura.
Does anybody still care about this podcast?
And Brazilian Tide.
Punters are people, too.
Talk fantasy football, bring you the latest in CFL news, and sprinkle in a little bit of nonsense.
Are you kidding? This is unbelievable!
Ready, set, hunt!
Week two is in the books. Brazilian Tide, Travis Kura, ready to talk about it. What was your pre-podcast meal, Ty?
Burger King at about 2:45.
Ooh, wow. That's a while ago already. I had the official chicken of the Two and Out podcast. Can you guess where I got it?
7-Eleven.
Thank heaven, man. It was so good. I haven't had it for months. I am feeling like $1 million. So let's talk about the games.
In the Huddle with Karan Ty on the Two and Out podcast.
Well, everything we thought we knew, I don't, maybe we didn't.
Well, I mean,
you know what? I thought one of Ottawa and Hamilton would win. It turned out they both did, and they both won in very convincing fashion. We start with Ottawa beating Saskatchewan 40-17, and credit to Ottawa, they beat Saskatchewan in every single aspect of that game.
It was embarrassing for the Riders. It was so bad. It was, and not saying that they played like world beaters last weekend, but this was a complete 180.
So I guess we have to talk about Zach Collaros, 4-for-10, 106 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. Initially, I thought maybe the second interception wasn't exactly his fault. It was a little bit lucky that Ottawa ended up intercepting that, and the way it was defended, it was, I feel like if it was last year, they probably would have called interference on that play, but I'm liking it. So far this season, it seems like the officials are letting the players play, and if it's a call you don't agree with, whatever, that is a part of sports, and I'm really loving the way the games are going this season as far as flow goes and things like that, but I watched it again. The right tackle was basically blown up a little bit on the play, the pocket collapsed, and he was forced to throw off his back foot. And when you're throwing off the back foot, you're not getting as much zip and power on the ball. So that's really what caused that interception. The end was a little bit fluky, bouncing off the defender's helmet into the air or whatever. The first one was, that was all on Zach. Those out patterns in the CFL are dangerous when it comes to pick sixes. But I think the news on that Rider quarterback side of the ball is that he had to leave the game due to concussion protocol. Now, I don't really agree with a lot of fans are calling it a phantom concussion. Oh, it didn't look like he had a concussion on the play. You know, we don't really know exactly when it happened. And you can't really predict when those things happen either, as we will talk about later in the podcast. So who knows when it happened? I don't think it was phantom. If he got hit and he got his bell rung, yeah, he's got to come out of the game. But I think we finally learn here that, hey, the situation isn't all that rosy behind Collaros either.
No, Brandon Bridge had to come in and take over. 13 for 23, not the greatest numbers. 145 yards and a TD, only had 27 on the ground. But like we were talking earlier in the year, you need to have a viable backup quarterback. You know, Toronto's got James Franklin. Edmonton went out and got Kevin Glenn. Things like that, where a guy can come in, injuries happen. And especially Zach Collaros the last couple of years has been made of glass, it seems. And I got to channel my inner John Fraser. To all those people saying, oh, it didn't look like he had a concussion. How the hell do you know? You can get a concussion from a whiplash. Let alone continuous blows to the head. So they need to shut up. Anyway, rant over. Without a viable quarterback, it's going to be, or without a viable backup quarterback, it's really hard to win games if your starter goes down. even just for a half, and God forbid it might be more for Zach Claros. We don't know anything yet. But, you know, nobody looked good for the Riders on this night. So it was kind of just a calamity of errors up to that point.
Yeah, there really isn't many positives to talk about on the Rider side of the ball here. And if this is their worst game of the season, it very well could be their absolute worst game of the season. But, I mean, Shaq Evans comes in. He replaces Daron Carter on the offensive side of the ball. He had 4 catches for 56 yards. Caleb Hawley, 3 for 71. And that is your leading receiver on the day. Jordan Williams-Lambert gets his first catch as a CFL player, also his first touchdown as a CFL player. So, I mean, the Riders do have some good receivers there. But with Daron Carter on the defensive side of the ball, yeah, we kind of figured he'd be matched up against Deontay Spencer. And the Red Blacks, it looked like they were throwing a whole ton of routes his way, crisscrossing patterns and pulling him this way and that way. And in the first half, I kind of thought Daron Carter was going to prove us all wrong again. It's pretty impressive to have 2 pick sixes in 2 starts as a defensive back. I don't know the last time.
I don't know if that's ever been done.
Yeah, so that is impressive. Credit to him. I don't think there are many receivers that could do that, step onto the other side of the ball and have 2 pick sixes in 2 games. I always thought that why aren't receivers thrown out there a little bit more? In an obvious passing down, maybe, when you know that the last play of a half or a game, a quarterback's just going to be bombing it, why don't they put a receiver back there? He's got better hands than a DB. There's a good chance he is taller. And you know what? That receiver instincts probably help him know a little bit what a quarterback is thinking. But the entire game, when you're not used to it, you get exposed a little bit. And that's kind of what happened here. Spencer, like you said, if they're matched up against each other, Spencer's going to blow by him. And that's exactly what happened in the second half. And that's what happened in this play.
Second down and 5. And Burris to throw again. Wants it deep. Has it deep. Touchdown, Deontay Spencer.
And you know who he got behind. I think there may be a little trash talk coming after this one.
Yeah, 82 yards for the touchdown. Daron didn't look that great. And then they made him look like a fool on 2 straight plays where he got 2 straight penalties in that second half as well. So it's tough to make those adjustments. You know, when he made that pick six in the first half, I was like, oh, my God, here we go again. He did it again. I couldn't believe it. And then it just that was the high point for that Saskatchewan team the entire night.
Credit to Ottawa in every phase of the game. You have to think that Red Blacks fans are so excited that they have no Thorpe on their team. That defense, this is their first game of the season, but it looked like they were in mid-season form.
Oh, they got after Kolaros and Bridge. They made that offensive line look like Swiss cheese. Noel Thorpe was doing whatever he wanted on that defensive side of the ball. You know, and he brought over guys that he knew could play and kind of followed him over from Montreal. And, you know, they've gelled together as a group, and they brought it on Thursday night.
And credit to the Red Blacks defensive line as well. The Rider offensive line, and, you know, that right guard position, Harrison, they're starting an import there. If he was better than Travis Bond in camp,
how bad was Travis Bond?
Oh, that's what I mean.
Right?
To me, it seems like there was a little bit of a salary thing, probably a little bit of a performance thing. If he's performing the same way Bond is, yeah, you go with the cheaper guy. But, oh, he got blown up a few times on the play. But also credit to the Red Blacks' offensive line. Every single person, I think, thought going into this game, they were going to be owned by Charleston Hughes and Willie Jefferson, and they got nothing done. Harris, he had a ton of time back there. Now, early in the game, I think it was the first play from scrimmage for the Red Blacks. It was, an off-tackle run, and the entire Rider D-line was in the backfield, and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be a long game for Ottawa. But they figured things out, and Harris had all the time in the world. Now, this, I think, is a big season for Trevor Harris. We've seen the numbers from him before. I think he's led the league in touchdown passes twice in his career, but in Ottawa in general, they haven't been able, well, they had the 12-win season, but they have.
Yeah, we all remember that.
But they haven't been able, and I think Trevor Harris especially, hasn't been able to keep it going for 18 games and stay consistent. We have seen...
Stay healthy for 18 games.
Yeah, that too. Because we have seen MOP games and MOP stretches from Trevor Harris. There's no denying that. But it has always seemed to sort of tail off towards the end of the year. So this is a big season for him. He's 32 years old already, which to me is wild. I guess he's been in the league for 6 years already, but this is a big season for him, and if he keeps it going like he did in this one, there is definite MOP potential here.
And he's got two of the best receivers, if not the two best receivers in the league, in Deontay Spencer and Greg Ellingson, and that's going to help you put up a lot of numbers. But the problem is he does run hot and cold. He'll go on a five game stretch where it's, you know, like he had on Thursday night, 26 to 36 for 345 with two TDs and maybe a pick, maybe three TDs and a pick. And then he'll go on a stretch after that, five or six games, or three games where it's under 200 yards. Maybe throws a touchdown, has a bunch of turnovers, doesn't really rush the ball. So if he can get rid of those and maybe only have one game and turn it around instead of stringing those games together, I think that'll go a long way into a possible MOP season.
Noel Thomas made his CFL debut and made a beautiful 42-yard catch, but Greg Ellingson had 8 catches, Spencer 6, Sinopoli 6. So those three guys are still getting it done. Now, what surprised me, again, credit to the Red Blacks offensive line, was William Powell. He had 19 carries for 94 yards and a touchdown. He also added 2 catches for 24 yards and a touchdown. So he got it done this week, and the guy runs angry. He runs absolutely violent, and it kind of makes me wonder, hey, do we have to end this Sam Hurrell experiment at middle linebacker as well? I actually think Cameron Judge has made a few plays so far this season, and I kind of wonder, should he just get the shot and be the full-time guy at middle linebacker? But I didn't think Powell would be able to run on this team, and credit to the Red Blacks for sticking to it and giving him nearly 20 carries to get him going against the Rider D.
Not only the rushes, they were able to, with all the yards he was able to get on the ground, he was able to get one through the air as well.
Yeah.
That just balances an offense when you can have a guy like William Powell, a guy like Andrew Harris that can do both. And the way he runs the ball, like if you don't have a middle linebacker who's going to be able to step up into a hole and take him down, he's going to reach that second level like it's nothing. So, I'm kind of with you that maybe Sam Hurrell isn't the guy to have there. And that being said, Cameron Judge is Canadian, so yeah. you're not losing anything with the ratio there. So that's one thing that the Riders could definitely be looking at.
They get Marcus Thigpen back this week. You have to think that they'll come into this game angry against Montreal, and if they don't, then that really shows what the Riders are made of. The Red Blacks are in tough. They head to Calgary on Thursday, but over the last few years, these two teams have had some classic battles, including some ties in there. So I'm really excited to see what the Red Blacks are going to bring. Let's move on to Friday Night Football. It was a doubleheader. We start with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers smashing the Alouettes 56-10.
Darrell Adams is going to throw it. He goes downfield. It's Harris in the end zone. Touchdown!
Nothing went right for the Alouettes here, and I don't know why, but it just happened to be last week that we started the Montreal swear jar. I think I had to add a toonie in the bucket after a comment I made on Twitter about the Alouettes. I have no idea how we're going to get through this without adding a few more bucks into there.
BJ Cunningham did have a touchdown.
He did. You can't deny that.
And that was the lone bright spot for the entire Alts team, let alone just the offense. Actually, the bright spot was Jeff Matthews getting playing time, because maybe they can get away from Drew Willey.
And I think Tyrell Sutton The kid, he had four carries and 53 yards. Yep. You might as well give him the ball every play. And Stefan Logan, the guy's 37 years old, and he's still out there giving it his all on every single play. He's one of the best players in the league. He's been around for years. And as far as defense goes, did you see that Muamba hit on Chris Strebler?
Oh, yeah.
I think we might be seeing some supplementary discipline in the form of a fine. I don't know about a suspension, but...
It's definitely fine-worthy.
Yeah. Muamba seems like a different guy so far this year as far as his attitude. We saw it in the preseason game with a late hit on Johnny Manziel. This hit against Strebler was just unnecessary. There's no other way to put it, but Muamba, man, the guy's playing with a bit of an attitude. Call it an edge. I don't know. Maybe Chip Cox is rubbing off on him a little bit. But you got to wonder here, what does Mike Sherman have in him? Like, does he want to deal with this for the rest of the season?
Mike Sherman looked like a man who was defeated.
He did.
After halftime, he looked like he's like, what did I get myself into? And I think it's, maybe Muamba's mad at himself for signing in Montreal. He's like, what did I do? This team is, we're going to add a lot of toonies tonight. This team was a dumpster fire last year, and it doesn't look like it's made any improvements this year. Granted, they have John Bowman, but what else do they have?
I'm a bit worried about them. It just doesn't Absolutely. Seem like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And
nope.
If it stays this bad... with the fans' support in Montreal, it's got to be worried about, and it's got to be talked about.
Mm-hmm, and, absolutely. And Milt Stegall made the point that they've become or are turning into your homecoming team. They're the team you book when you know that you're going to win.
And you know what? Maybe they are. Maybe this is rock bottom. But how many times has that been said? This has to be rock bottom.
If this is past rock bottom, this is the people's elbow now.
One, two, like, three.
Like really, Drew Willey was 16 of 25 for 111 yards. What is that? That's not good. And then Jeff Matthews comes in and goes 3 of 5 for 18 with a pick. Jeff Matthews was the 17th quarterback since Anthony Calvillo to play in a game. Not start, but just play in a game. Since Anthony Calvillo left. Until they figure that out, it does not matter what they do on with receivers, O-line, defense. It doesn't matter. If they don't have a quarterback, they're not going to do anything.
As for Winnipeg, honestly, I don't know if this is a combination between Montreal's ineptitude and Winnipeg's talent. But they look like champions, and Chris Strebler...
It was the perfect storm. The perfect storm.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Strebler goes 22 of 28 for 246 and three touchdowns. He adds another rushing touchdown, but he also had 10 carries for 98 yards. This guy is a superstar in the making. Now, I know we're two games into his career, but have the Bombers found a franchise quarterback? I assume that as soon as Nichols is back... he gets his job back. Now, if Winnipeg goes into Hamilton this week, which suddenly this looks like the game of the week, this is going to be the game to watch. If they go into Hamilton and win at Tim Hortons Field, just say Winnipeg goes 5-1.
Nichols isn't getting his job back. You can't.
I know you're not supposed to lose your job to injury, but he has to sit on the bench if that happens.
Absolutely. It's just like in Mighty Ducks 2 with Julie the Cat riding the hot hand. She didn't get to play because Goldberg was winning. This is exactly the same thing. If Strebler goes 5-1, like you said, Matt Nichols comes back, how do you let Matt Nichols go and start? And then you become a one-dimensional football team again because Matt Nichols can't run like Strebler does.
Well, how do you defend him? When your quarterback has 10 carries... and your franchise running back has 15, and that was probably, I don't know, two quarters and a little bit of those 15 carries. How do you stop that?
And then he was still able to add 246 yards through the air.
Yep.
Like, the kid is playing at an unreal level right now. Granted, we don't know if he's going to stay there. That's yet to be seen. But right now, if you're winning football games, why would you change it? Why would you go away? Exactly. Like, if Nichols comes back, great. He can hold a clipboard. Because you know what's going to happen when Nichols comes in. He's going to find ways to lose a game that Strebler could have won. Now, granted, that being said, if Strebler, you know, doesn't win another game, or if he's, you know, 3-3, then maybe Nichols gets that shot. But if he's 5-1, there's no way.
Yeah, it's week two, and he's got one win. I know the last one was against Edmonton. It was a storm delay, but he came darn close in that one. But I think the play of the game goes to Darvin Adams.
Oh, was that not a beautiful throw?
What's his QB rating?
Oh, I'm afraid to even look at it.
He had a 26-yard touchdown pass to Andrew Harris.
Yeah, I saw that. I was watching, kind of doing stuff on the laptop and the screen, and had the game on the background. I look, and Andrew Harris catch a touchdown pass. I'm like, well, here we go, Harris from Strebler. And then I look, and I'm like, oh, Darvin Adams. Oh, yeah, I took him out of my lineup. But we'll talk about that later and how mad I am.
So, yeah, we'll get to that. So, 9 receivers end up catching a ball here. Drew Wolitarski, who played with Strebler in college, maybe there's something there. He had 4 catches for 46 yards, but also 2 touchdowns. And how about Rashawn Simonize's game? 2 catches for 64 yards, but he also had that beauty block punt, too.
Yeah, this kid that looking like an unreal pick for the Blue Bombers. And he made a couple plays, and the one play he made right by the bench, the whole bench was jacked.
Oh, yeah, they were.
And even O'Shea, you could see it was like, yeah, this kid is the real deal. And as long as he can keep doing what he's doing, he's going to get a spot in this lineup.
And you know what? I wasn't all that sure about the Bomber D line starting the year, but Tristan Okapalugo, he was all over the field. And he was making plays. Jackson Jeffcoat on the other side. I don't think there's anything negative to say in this game. There is a couple questions I have. I know we don't have these stats ready. When's the last time a Stubler defense gave up 50 points? And when's the last time 3 Manitobans scored a touchdown in one game? Nick Dembski, Andrew Harris, and we had Keenan LaFrance.
That might have... Labor Day last year, maybe, because I'm pretty sure, or maybe it might have been Bandrable, but I'm pretty sure LaFrance and Dembski got one in the same game. I'd have to look it up, but I bet you it happened last year.
But this one, they're all on the same team.
Yeah,
so.
Not on the same team, but yeah, that, when you look at that, yeah, it's a little bit of homegrown talent.
Yeah, our buddy Neil from Winnipeg, he sent me that message and got me thinking. I'm like, that's impressive for the Bombers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody even really thinks about, you know, Manitoba as a football hotbed, because you have the Dinos and U of A Golden Bears out here in Alberta, and you got U of S in Saskatchewan. I don't want to be rude, but I mean, like, Manitoba isn't, you don't talk about them in that top three. You don't talk
even
about
though the Bisons do have a great program.
It's unreal, but they're not. They don't get the... Well, maybe it's because of where we live that the exposure is a little different.
Yeah.
Which probably has a lot to do with it. But, yeah, like that province is... And the high school programs there, too, are churning out guys that, you know, go to college and have played pretty big roles. So, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise that, you know, 3 Manitobans scored. Maybe not on the same team, but, you know... They are starting to become, if not already, kind of are somewhat of a football factory.
And it does need to be said, the Winnipeg offensive line, I think Jamarcus Hardrick might be my favorite offensive lineman in the entire league. That guy is nasty. He stands out on every single play. He makes sure He finishes every play right to the whistle. Yeah, sometimes he does take penalties for being a little rough, but I think in an offensive lineman, you know what? That's okay once in a while. He is
a monster. And that happened after the Mwamba hit, too, with with Gosen. You know, you're battling guys all night, and you get a little fired up, and your quarterback takes somewhat of a cheap shot. Yeah, you're gonna start getting a little nasty, and and especially in a blowout, that's kind of why I like blowouts. It gets a little Western, and that's kind of what I like. Chippy, even that doesn't matter what sport. I love it when guys get thrown at in baseball. I love it when, you know, a hockey game gets chippy, and I love it when guys are just bowling people over for no reason in football. It's just one. I just love a chippy game.
You know what? And I think Jamal Westerman and Henock Mwamba, they kind of enable each other a little bit. Did you catch what Westerman was doing when he tackled Strebler and kept his leg in between his?
Yeah.
The guy is a... He plays like a...
And it's great.
But he means to. And he gets under your skin. And I will say this about the Alouettes. There's too much talent to be this bad. So... When you got, I know Chip Cox, this is probably the last year, but you've got guys on that defense like Mitchell White, Tommy Campbell, Dominic Ellis, Jamal Westerman, Chris Ackie, he's a draft pick, but the kid had 8 tackles, and Henock Mwamba, they're too talented to go 0-18.
I would hope so. That being said... When you have a, and I know this is a broken record, when Drew Willey is your quarterback, and the offense they have right now, look at the amount of time the defense is having to stay on the field.
Yeah, it wears you down.
Right, and eventually it's just too much, and you can't do anything about it anymore, and you get run over. And that could happen more often than not this year, and it sucks because you want parity in the league. You don't want teams getting blown out by 46 points. But I don't know if you're Montreal, I don't know what you can do. Like, Winnipeg had the ball for over 38 minutes Friday night, right? Like, that's a lot of time for your defense to be on the field. And there's a lot of guys on that defense, and I don't want to be an ass, but that are, you know, getting up there. For them to be on the field for 38 minutes, that's going to create a lot of issues for that defense and a lot of opportunity for the opposing offense.
Let's go to the second half of that Friday nighter. The Hamilton Tiger Cats beat the Eskies 38-21. And what a performance from Jeremiah Mazzola.
Blitz comes, picked up, and Tasker on a crossing pattern with a block. Luke Tasker could score, will score. Touchdown, Cats! How about the work down the sideline from his teammates, too? And Luke Tasker has his second touchdown of the night and second touchdown of the season.
Now, this is another one very similar to the Riders and Red Blacks game. The Ticats just outplayed the Eskimos every single way in this game. Now, when the Eskimos, their very first possession was an 88-yard touchdown to Duke Williams, and you're thinking, oh boy, we're going to have a Friday night gunslinging matchup here.
But shoot out at the OK Corral.
Yeah. After that, Duke Williams had 3 catches for, 17 yards? So the Tiger Cats were really able to shut them down. But we kind of wondered about, does Hamilton trust their running backs that they have behind Alex Green? And I don't know if John White's going to get into the lineup this year. But Mercer Timmis has 17 carries, 133 yards, including a dagger 44-yard run where he was basically untouched. We have Jeremiah Mazzoli, who had 7 carries for 59 yards. There were numerous people at that game that were there to see Johnny Manziel. And I actually talked to a guy that bought tickets because he thought Manziel was starting. Now, this is a very delicate situation, I think, for the league and the Tiger Cats to be in. I understand the position that the league is in and the attention that Manziel brings to it. But I was working on Saturday and I started talking football with one of the guys there, and somebody made a comment, oh, they just got to get Johnny Manziel in. And then the one guy's like, no, you want to win? Mazzoli has earned it. He's been a backup for 8 years. And the football he played after Labor Day last year was incredible. And you know what? He had a great game against Calgary. They were this close to winning that last week. And he had an amazing game here. I mean, the rushing yards, the passing yards, he had one interception. But Mazzoli, he keeps this going for the rest of the season. The Ticats are scary.
Oh, and we saw at the end of last year, you know, he's a dual threat. You know, he's able to stay in the pocket and make throws, but he's also able to scramble. And make throws on the run, or even, you know, tuck it in and go. And he out-dueled Mike Riley. Like, how often do you say that? Jeremiah Masoli and Chris Streveler were the two leading fantasy quarterbacks this week. Like, is this bizarro world?
Yeah, in a week where Riley and Mitchell played, you know?
Right? But if he keeps winning, there's no way Manziel gets a sniff.
No.
If they're 5-1, 4-2, no way. And those people who are buying tickets because Manziel's there, it's like read a news article. He's not starting. Just type it in. It'll give you the depth chart on the internet that he is the backup.
Now, just say Mazzoli keeps this level of play all year long. There's absolutely no way that the Ticats can let him start. Now, he signs a 2-year deal. Would he want to go into next season knowing that he's probably going to be a backup again?
Win the job, then. Granted, Masoli, if this keeps going like it is this year, Masoli will be the incumbent next year.
Yeah.
Show up at camp and be ready to go and, you know, take his job away. You came in knowing what this was. And granted, he signed a 2-year deal, but that's because you have to. I didn't like the signing from the start. I hope everything works out for Manziel. I really do. But I just, people that say, well, Manziel needs to get in there, he's like, no, this league is not for guys. It's not a developmental league. This is a professional football league. Manziel, yeah, he wants to get back in the NFL. Granted, everybody that plays in the CFL, if they could go to the NFL, they would. And I don't blame them. The money's there and all that stuff, you know, the financial security and all that. But we're not in the game of giving guys a second shot just so they can leave after 2 years and go back to the NFL. That's not what this league is. So tough on Manziel if he doesn't get to play. That's not my problem. If Hamilton's winning football games, that's what their players are played to do. Manziel's going to have to sit there and take it.
You have to think the Owls are going to be calling Vernon Adams at the very least.
I would hope so.
Now, if Masoli is, you know, still playing at this level at Labor Day, and it is talked about, you do need that backup quarterback security in case something happens later in the year, and I don't know if the Tiger Cats are willing to let go of a Manziel in case something happens to Mazzoli, but you know, I'm sure the Owls have already called about
there should be three teams calling about Vernon Adams.
Yeah,
it should be the Owls, the Argonauts, and the Riders at this point.
Yeah,
because we don't know what's up with Kolaros. So those three teams should have at least made calls. Granted, the Owls should be pushing hard because what they have isn't working, but that was the game before. So Banks had 117 yards on 6 catches and a touchdown.
Yep.
That's a pretty good night.
They had 2 100-yard receivers. Tasker has 5 for 103 and 2 touchdowns. And you know what? There were 2 additions to the Tiger Cats lineup that I thought made massive differences here. And one being Terrence Tolliver. He came in, made 4 catches for 76 yards. Some of them were in tough, tough coverage. And some of them, he just went up and got them. So he's healthy. We'll talk to a, we'll talk about another receiver that has come back from the NFL. Is not 100%, but he's still lighting it up in the next game. But the Tiger Cats, they look like a darn good team. That other addition is Delvin Bro. He was working against Darrell Walker a lot of the game. And the Tiger Cats, they like to play their man-to-man. And I think Delvin Bro, the guy shows up on Tuesday. He's starting on Saturday, and the defense looked great.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about this on Thursday, you know, your defensive halves. To play man on man, it's not like reading a zone playbook. You literally cover one guy.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a little bit easier for him to come in and adjust. Granted, he gets one of the best receivers in the league first game back, so not a lot of just dipping the toe in the water there. But he looked good.
As far as the Eskimos go, I know it's only week two. I'm kind of worried about CJ Gable and. He doesn't look, and maybe it's the line. He doesn't seem to have much room when he does get the ball. He had 9 carries for 36 yards. He did have another 3 catches, but late last year, and I think heading into this year with a full training camp, Eskimo fans were really excited to have him for a full season.
Yeah, from what we saw last year, and just the 4 or 5 games he played with the Edmonton Eskimos, it looked like he was going to be the one that, you know, they had been searching all year to find somebody to replace John White after the injury, and it looked like they had finally found it. And he goes through training camp, you know, everybody's expecting the world out of this guy, and it's literally set up to disappoint. Granted, he hasn't had the greatest start.
Yeah.
But we saw it in Saskatchewan too. You know, Messam only got a handful of carries. CJ Gable only got a handful. You know, if you're not producing the yards off the hop, the offensive coordinators aren't that scared to not give you the ball. Maybe that's a little bit of it. Maybe the coordinators need to stick with the running back a little bit more. But I have faith that at some point Gable will figure it out, and maybe the offensive line will gel a little bit more, and because there are some new additions, and you know, that might take a little time. So. I don't think CJ Gable is what he was the end of last year. I don't think he is what he was in Hamilton. I think he's somewhere in the middle, and we just need to find that.
I was listening to the post-game show on 630 CHED, and there was a fascinating interview with Mike Riley, who probably is the best interview in the CFL. And I'm going to be honest here. He might be one of the best interviews in all of pro sports. The guy... He does not speak with cliches, and he doesn't give you the same old. And when he started breaking down the Tiger Cat defense, it was absolutely mesmerizing to listen to. Basically, he was saying, and if you noticed in the game, the Eskimos took plenty of deep shots, and they did connect with Kenny Stafford. He had a... one catch for 55 yards, and they were taking a few shots at him deep. Now, if some of those connect, maybe the result is a little bit different here, and maybe this is what teams are going to have to try to do to beat the Ticats defense. But Riley, great interview to listen to, and maybe that's what the Bombers are going to have to do next week in Hamilton.
Mike Riley is just... so good at everything he does.
He is. Like, when you're that good at a post-game interview, how much better do you get?
Right? Like, especially after losing by 17 points. Like, I'm trying to get words out here, and I can't. Like, I'm speechless at just how this guy carries himself on and off the field. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so that interview, it was just absolutely fascinating to listen to. I don't have it, and I don't know if Ched makes it available on their website. It probably is. But just to listen to him break down a defense like that was really, really cool. And like you said, yeah, after a tough loss in a home opener, to give that kind of answer was really cool. So maybe we do see teams take some deep shots at the Tiger Cats in the next few weeks here. And that's, I think, one thing we haven't really seen much of from Winnipeg yet. Strevler has been able to move the ball, but he hasn't been making the deep shots so far.
Well, he hasn't had to either.
Yeah, that too.
You know, he's if it's not there, he'll tuck it and take the 8 yards. It'd be nice to see him slide instead of, you know, taking helmet-to-helmet hits, but that's neither here nor there. You know, Hamilton 38, Edmonton 21. Hamilton's now won 4 of the last 6 games in Commonwealth.
They have. They seem to do well there for some reason.
And Masoli post-game said, yeah, we're pretty comfortable here. If you are an Eskimo player, that has to piss you off.
Well, if they're pretty comfortable there, hopefully they get to play there in November. That's what Ticat fans are thinking.
No doubt.
And you know what? That's a really good possibility now, because at the beginning of the year, I think everybody had the Argos written in for first in the East. I think a lot had Ticats probably second and the Red Blacks third. But
or flip-flopped between those two, yeah.
Yeah, and after this week, the injury to Ricky Ray, the Stampeders do win 41-7, and I was watching back the highlights again, and I think this clip from Matt Dunnigan really speaks volumes as to how everybody was feeling.
Yeah, when Ricky was being taken off the field right by our area here, I unplugged and I leaned over the railing and I yelled to him. I said, Ricky, I said, we're all praying for you. And he looked right in the eye and he raised his hand and waved to me. And I just thought that was the best thing I could happen is his moving his hand. So I think that's just important to understand.
It's really hard to talk about this game. I don't know about you. I'm kind of distracted and watching it. It was just so damn sad because they were down 33 or whatever it was. And Ray comes back out, and I'm pretty sure Suter said the play before, you got to wonder how long Trespin keeps Ricky Ray in this game. The Stampeders, yeah, they do win 41-7. And you know what? The Argos had over 16,000 people in the stands. Say what you want. They had 13,000 people through the gates in their home opener last year. So 3,000 more is actually a success when it comes to Toronto. And things are looking up. They're trying to get more momentum. They won a championship, and this happens. Ricky Ray kind of gets, I don't know, he gets sandwiched between two defenders. It was just such an awkward play. It wasn't dirty. It wasn't late. It's just one of those football things that happens, and I think that's what makes it even more sad. The guy wins the championship in November, fourth Grey Cup, one of all-time greats, and then this happens.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to watch. Not necessarily hit, but I just got home. I went to mom and dad's to grab mail, and I walked in the door, talked to dad for a bit, had supper, looked at the TV after I put my dish in the dishwasher, and there's an Argo laying on the field, and the card had come out. I'm like, okay. And then I'm looking closer, and I see 15, and I'm just like, no way. This is not happening. This is not the way you want it to go. You know, it was a completely innocent play. Nobody feels worse than, I believe it was Davis. Nobody feels worse than he does, or even Cordero Law. You know, it just sucks. Wrong place, wrong time. You know, Trestman in the post game said all the early reports have been good, and we got the update today from the CFL on my phone that he had feeling and movement in all of his extremities. So really just hoping that what they had to do last night, which, you know, precautionary measure, we're hoping that's all it was, and, you know, he'll be able to bounce back. Not necessarily saying, I don't know if he's going to play again this year. That's yet to be seen. But, you know, if he can recover and, you know, still have a good quality of life, that's going to be a win.
Yeah, obviously that is the most important thing next to football. You just don't like to see that happen to a legend, you know, And I really hope that that's not his last time on a football field, because that's a crappy way for it to end. But no matter what happens, he's an all-time great, and maybe is the greatest of all time. All the fourth quarter comebacks we've seen, we saw it last year. He was still doing it at an extremely high level. Yeah. he was still doing it. Now, James Franklin comes into the game. I think we all imagined that yeah, he would come in and maybe when Ray was ready to hang up the cleats and Franklin would just take the reins and go in. And maybe he does get the reins a little bit earlier here and we see what Franklin has to give. He was very coveted heading into the offseason and maybe he's got this Argo team and he's going to be at the helm for the rest of the season. Who knows? But we'll wait for the updates on Ricky Ray as the week moves along. James Wilder has 10 carries for 60 yards in this one. Other than that, the Argo offense just didn't get anything going at all,
stagnant,
as you know by the score.
The leading receiver had 32 yards.
Yeah, it was pure domination again. Mm-hmm. From the Calgary Stampeders.
Regular season, weird.
Yeah. Bo Levi throws 22 passes, 20 completions, 324 yards for 3 touchdowns. They can say that last year's Grey Cup didn't matter, but it sure did. Eric mm-hmm. Rogers comes in, 5 catches, 131 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I think it's safe to say that Rogers is back. And at halftime, he said he's not 100%.
Oh, my God. Like, if this isn't 100% Eric Rogers, like, he might get you 30 points a week.
Yeah.
Like, that's a little ridiculous. There was, I believe it was his first touchdown. He was the entire offense. Like he had the one. He went up and got one. I literally thought they were going to call it incomplete. Ball looked like a bobble. They didn't. You know, next 2 plays later, he's in the back of the end zone, wide open. Like the guy picked up right where he left off.
DeVaris Daniels has to be talked about as well here because it is now 5 regular season games in a row for Daniels to have a touchdown against the Argos. Danny Austin on Twitter covers the Stampeders. If you're a Stamps fan or just a CFL fan, make sure you give him a follow. He tweeted this out, DeVaris Daniels stats against the Argos. Let's go back to his first game against him in 2016. 5 catches, 126 yards, and a touchdown. Another game in 2016, 3 catches, 94 yards, 2 touchdowns. Last year, 476, a touchdown, 8, 114, 2 touchdowns. The Grey Cup, 11 catches, 113 yards. And this game, 4 catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown. Daniels, for some reason, dominates Toronto.
I don't know if it's just a matchup thing or what it is, but it's just one of those things where he shows up, puts on his cleats, and just a team that he can dominate, it
yeah.
seems. And it's... it's phenomenal to watch. You know, since 2016, he has averaged just about over 20 points fantasy-wise a game.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, at the price point he's at, that's not that bad of a pickup.
Oh, it's good.
So, yeah, right around that 22.9 mark. Like, guy puts up big numbers against the Argos. Sucks that he only gets to play him twice a year for your fantasy yeah. roster, but keep that in mind next time these two hook up.
The running backs that the Stampeders have here, we'll mention kick returners. Roy Finch is gone, and the Stampeders aren't hurting at all. Don Jackson had 9 carries for 123 yards. Terry Williams, 12 carries for 70 yards. You add in the quarterbacks, they had over 200 yards rushing in this game, and Terry Williams on returns, he had 102-yard return. His average on punts was 44, over 44 yards. Like, Williams is a game changer. The Stampeders look so far even better than they did a year ago. it's next guy up in Calgary, and the depth that they have is incredible.
Yeah, I want to know how they do it.
It's the pre-practice roster, man.
It's not fair. It's like Saskatchewan got caught. Maybe we're looking at the wrong team.
Yeah, they just got caught. They sucked at cheating. When you can't cheat, then you know things are bad.
Yeah, it's like me trying to cheat at crib against my grandpa. I get caught every time. He was the king.
So Kamar Jordan had 5 catches for 39 yards, but the story is here, when he chased down that play, Ronnie Yell recovers a fumble, but Jordan was not giving up on it, and he chased him down.
No, and a little side note, I got the pleasure to listen to Chris Schultz on the way home.
Oh, on the radio.
Saturday night on the radio broadcast, because Sirius carries the home broadcast. And the call on that was phenomenal. And I remember very distinctly Schultz saying, all Ronnie L needed to do there was run faster. Because apparently it's just that easy.
Come on, pick up your legs, kid.
Yeah, high knees.
Absolute dominance from the Stampeders, but the story of this one is Ricky Ray. Quickly, let's go through the performers of the week as far as fantasy goes. Hopefully you had a couple guys on your team. I didn't have the best week. I'm pretty sure it was Andrew Harris, Jeremiah Mazzoli, and the Stamps defense that saved my week from being a complete disaster, but you could have had a game changer of a week, but you didn't listen to your gut.
No, it was...
You listened to me.
and the damn panel. you know, I had Strebler and Harris. I left them in. 37.6, 24.6. If I would have left Powell in, that would have been another 25.8. Darrell Walker got me 17.6. He was in my lineup. I had Darvin Adams. He was, I believe it would have been about 13 points. Wolitarski, 20.6. I took Wolitarski and Powell out to put in Messam and Deontay Spencer. Whoops.
Hey, well, Spencer wasn't the worst.
No, but Messam got me, what, 4 points?
Yeah.
The leader this week at 171.2. He did not have a guy under 20 points except for his defense.
Well, so, cheers to that guy.
Yeah, that is...
Or girl, who knows?
Mark Jack, 64, 171.2, led by Strebler and Harris, Powell, Ellingson, Duke Williams, Luke Tasker. Like, I don't know how you fit, well, I mean, Strebler only being $6,000, you can fit a lot of good players on your roster.
Yeah, you can. And we'll see how much his price goes up this week.
Oh, I don't think it's going to be good for a lot of people.
It does feel like the season is flying by already. Week three is, I guess, underway now. We'll be back Thursday morning to preview week three, and we've got some good games. Ottawa, Calgary on Thursday, Winnipeg, Hamilton, BC, Edmonton, and Montreal, Saskatchewan. If the Riders aren't mad for that one, well, then the pitchforks will definitely be out.
It's a good opponent to have for a rebound game.
I already told my wife, if the Riders lose, I'm going streaking.
Oh, we're going to run it through the quad.
And you know what? I will.
You think KFC is still open?
I will have my head on a swivel, unlike that guy in BC. Like, they could probably catch me from behind because I don't have the speed, but I'll be aware of my surroundings at least.
Well, he should have zigged instead of zagging.
All right, buddy. We will talk to you Thursday, eh?
Sounds good.
Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. Thursday, we'll be back with another episode of 2 and Out.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at ZF Pod Network on Twitter.